Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Off the Post. I'm Russ Cohen. We've got Anthony Mangione. Ant, how are you?
Doing good there. A little delay there to start and some lightning and thunder.
Wow, that was like a little delay. I didn't even know we were on.
a little bit of lightning and thunder in the background. If that's affecting the broadcast.
Could be. I'm going to tell you things we're not going to do tonight. We are not going to do a draft winners and losers. We are not going to redraft the draft in like 30 different slides. We're not doing that. And we're not going to grade the draft. We're not going to put a letter grade to how teams did. I can guarantee all of those things.
You suck, Russ.
That's what most people said when I said it. But it's like you bought a new car. Let's grade this new car. Well, how can I grade it? I haven't even driven it. You know, it's like that's what people want, and I can't do it. It's not only an inexact science. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly. It sounds based off of appearances and things of that sort. But yeah, I there's something I generally abhor. It's in hockey. It's the grading of players who won't even likely be on the rosters for at least usually 3 years. In most cases, so how can you possibly grade it? It's just impossible. You could say you can have a good feeling about who you're choosing.
Sure, I like that guy. This guy could fill a role in the future. All of that's fair game.
Yeah.
There's still a lot to talk about that way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah, we have that. And,
but I get a little crazy. I do. I even saw on one site where it said, well, Pavel Zacha is not totally a safe pick, but he's the best prospect in the Devils organization. I'm thinking, why isn't he a safe pick? Go watch him play. I think he's a pretty safe pick.
Yeah, I think so too. I like them a lot. You know me. I had him when I did my own non-scientific ratings. I guess we could call them. You know, for that slot, you and I both know we pretty much were flip-flop between him and Provorov as terms of sixth and seventh best prospect in our mind. So, yeah, the Devils had to take him. They had a need. They had a screaming need for him and for a player like him, and they got him. And again, will he play this year? Probably not. But, I mean, he'll certainly, I think, in juniors have a lot of motivation
down the road.
Behind
him. Yep. All right. Yeah, we are now going to bring on Travis Hughes from SB Nation and Broad Street Hockey. Trav, how are you?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Well, you know, I went on a little rant. Nothing about your site, but, like, you know, 30 slides on redrafting the draft. Yes,
Russ
2 days, 3 days after the draft, let's redraft it, or let's put letter grades to it, or, you know.
Redraft the 2015 draft already.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
So that's what people are doing already? It's been 3 days.
Bleacher Report. I'll out Bleacher Report. They did it already. It's
shocking,
ridiculous.
Shocking. That's insane.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, if you wanna try to give grades under the guise of, you know, being an expert and thinking that you know what all of these kids are going to pan out to be, fine. You know, I can be okay with that. If you're going to try to redraft the thing, like, completely and say you're that big of an expert, that's just crazy talk.
It is crazy talk. Even the winners and losers, like Yahoo did, it's like, come on, haven't we moved past the winners and losers? You could like things the teams did and not like trades and other things, but you don't know if they're a loser yet. Like, even Don Sweeney, who may look like the worst GM since Mike Milbury, we don't know. Like, if it works out, all those people have to eat their words.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, I think that, you know, you can get clues and you know, you can use history to be, you know, a little bit of a helping hand in some of this stuff. But yeah, I mean, you know, I would say that, you know, coming out of the draft, that if you want to look at it that way, yeah, Don Sweeney's team looks worse than they did when they entered the draft. But, you know, I think when you're, like, matching teams up against each other and you're trying to make long-term judgments off of things, then that's when it gets a little crazy. I mean, it's one thing. I mean, you can sit here and say that the Flyers, I think the Flyers had a great weekend and they look a lot better than they did on Thursday. But you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to pan out, you know, and that they're going to win the Stanley Cup in 5 years or whatever. I mean, if you're trying to make long-term judgments on this stuff, that's when I get a little upset with some
sure.
of these prognostications.
So based on the Flyers draft, what were like three things that you really liked? Because, I mean, again, even when I was on CBS the other night, and when they mentioned the goalies, I'm like, look, you know, unless we're talking about Marc-Andre Fleury, which I didn't say on the show, but I'm just saying in general, if we're talking about
right.
Marc-Andre Fleury, like I knew he was a can't miss. But for most goalies, I have no idea. You don't know for like 4 or 5 years.
No.
So, but what are the three things that you liked about the draft? And then, Ant, I'll ask you the same question.
Yeah, well,
mm-hmm.
I mean, to piggyback off what you said, I think that the goalie thing, I mean, yeah, I mean, you can't, there's no, I mean, goalies are the hardest position to judge. Everybody knows that. And, like, you know, it's the hope is that if you take three goalies in a draft, one of them pans out. And maybe
mm-hmm.
they will, maybe they won't, and we'll find out in 5 years. I mean, that's really the way the goalie thing goes. But, yeah, I mean, three things. I think that, you know, Provorov is a great pick.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, regardless of the fact that the Flyers are stacked at defense at prospect, you know, in a prospect pool, I think that, you know, they're, I don't want to say guaranteed, but they're as close as you can get to guaranteed to have, you know, to get at least one or two very good defensemen out of this group.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, I think Provorov is probably he probably is the best of the bunch. Other than Provorov, I think that, you know, trading up to get Konechny is a great move. I think that, you know, a lot of people were talking about going back and forth between a couple of guys at 7, even with Provorov on the board, you know, because they're so weak at forward. And I think that, you know, Konechny is a guy that they saw, that they liked, and that they were, you know, everybody kind of expected to go a little bit earlier than 24 and to have the ability. And I guess the credit really has to go to Hextall's foresight, and maybe foresight isn't the word, but, you know, the ability to, you know, stack up as many draft picks as he did in this draft and give him the ability to even trade up to 24 from 29,
mm-hmm.
you know, by collecting so many picks in the later rounds. I think that, you know, you have to give him a lot of credit for that. And, you know, to have the guts to move up to 24 to get him, and I think that's connecting is a great pick. I think that, you know, he immediately becomes their top forward prospect in the draft. I think that, you know, it's just a really smart move, and it you know, he sees somebody to be excited about. Yeah, and the third thing, I think that, you know, I think that if you're looking at the whole weekend, you have to look at the Pronger and the Grossman trade. I think that,
mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't in the draft. It was right after the draft. But, you know, they cleared up some cap space, and I think that it helps them out. I mean, it's obviously a great move. I mean, there's no way else to
look
at.
There's no downside.
You know, yeah, I mean, they get a guy in Sam Gagner who, you know, is probably better than some of the forwards they already have on their team. I mean, he was Phoenix's, Arizona's leading scorer last year. And, you know, at least at forward, I think Ekman-Larsson may have had a point or two more than he did. But,
you know.
In terms of forwards, he was a top scorer last year. So, you know, I mean, bad team, regardless. He was a top scorer on a team in the NHL, and they get him. I think he can, you know, slot in, whether he slots in on the wing or at center. I think that he's a, you know, he's a good pickup. And I'm personally glad that they didn't buy him out, because I think he can be a contributor. But and worst case scenario, he's not a contributor and his contract's up at the end of the year, so
right.
Not a big deal. And then you get rid of the money that you owed to Chris Pronger, obviously. And, you know, the actual money wasn't a big deal, but you were able to get out of that contract to a certain extent. Right. I mean, you were able to get out of it to a certain extent with long-term injury, but, you know, long-term injury isn't free money. There are still salary cap implications there. So to dish that off and then to, you know, open up a spot on your defense with Nick Grossman going, I think is also a very smart move. So I love the trade. I think it's brilliant, and I'm actually still kind of shocked that Ron Hextall was able to pull it off.
And what do you have to say about it?
I mean, kind of, I'm sure Flyer fans were sort of kind of holding their breath that when we got to pick number three, because, I mean, everybody knew the first two picks were going to be. When we got to number three there, I think a lot of people were sort of wondering what direction Arizona was going to go in. And when they went up to the podium, it became pretty apparent, I think, that it was that they were going to likely go with Dylan Strome. And that, of course, everybody's sort of gaming what could potentially happen going down from there. I've been on record for a while now that how much of a fan I am of Ivan Provorov and his game. What I've seen of him in Brandon is very tantalizing. He played such a complete game, and even with again the with the Flyers' depth in their system, it is one of those things that you just can't give up. When you have an opportunity for a talent of his level on your back, yeah, on the back line, you just can't pass that up. And they did, and they took him at set once the Zaka pick came through, and it was pretty obvious that the Provorov was going to be Philadelphia's pick, and they certainly delivered on that. And we're going to see how he looks certainly in developmental camp and going into training camp, and I think he's going to have a decent chance to potentially get a crack on this roster. Although I would probably caution and say that you want to be somewhat cautious with regards to it. If he's able to take the job, then he takes the job. So getting Provorov certainly was something that I saw as a target, and Philadelphia's able to achieve it. Connect me again was an interesting thing. Again, you and I kind of did a little bit of a rough thing together on probables at number 7. And I had Provorov at the top of my list, and at the very end of that, you know, initial probable list was Travis Konechny. And I had heard enough sort of whispers about the fact that Philadelphia had interest in him that I didn't necessarily think they were going to take him at 7, but there was definitely going to be somebody on their radar. And as Boston makes their picks from 13 to 15, all of a sudden, you know, things start getting interesting. Like, guys that you didn't expect to be that high are now suddenly players are beginning to fall. And once we got past the 23rd pick and Brock Boeser gets taken, Hextall springs in, uses the 29 and 61 to move up to 24, and we thought it was either going to be, like I said, my first impression was it's got to be Konechny. If not, maybe they're trying to grab Sprong, and lo and behold, it's a Konechny. And again, good pick in my mind, especially for the value of a guy that I figured was going to be me taken somewhere in the teens. Instead, Philadelphia's able to grab a hold of him and get somebody of need. I'll reflect Travis certainly on the second point, the importance of adding goaltending to Philadelphia's stable right now. It was pretty thin, and they're able to come out of this draft, you know, with the two picks of Sandstrom. Again, we're going to see where things are going to be at with Sandstrom. He's rated pretty. I know a lot of people had him and Daniel Vladar neck and neck. I was a proponent of drafting Vladar, but certainly have nothing against them taking Sandstrom. Certainly that's part of Philadelphia's Swedish pipeline now that they have a Swedish scout that they were going to be able to use, much like they did with the Lindholm pick last year, that they were going to plumb Sweden a little bit, and Sandstrom was their guy. Tomek, we had kind of a little bit of a tip from day one, from the night before, that Philadelphia was going to have him on the radar. Certainly we asked Dave Hextall about him, and Hextall, you know, because he's recruited to North Dakota, that he
and his
was
name was getting
was
floated
available
around at the combine too.
Yeah,
it was
absolutely. So there was definitely going to be an interest there, and I know Ron, and again Hextall said that it wasn't necessarily Dave Hextall's input necessarily as to why they drafted him. Let's face
but
it, at the
was
end of the day, I think there was in reality it probably was. So I certainly was on board with those two draft picks there. And then, again, the interesting part was also the trade back with Los Angeles when they're at 98-99. Dove McPhalls is an interesting prospect. I thought at 99 potentially they were going to go for maybe an Austin Wagner. Instead, they moved back. But from what we're hearing here, I think that they really had Vorobiev pretty high for them. At 4, and they felt like he was going to be available 104, and they grabbed him, and they liked him. And then beyond that, of course, the third thing was, as I'm driving out for Lauderdale, the word comes down that Hextall's made the trade for to move Grossman and Pronger's contract out. So that was things that needed to be done. And, you know, Hextall was able to manage and get it done. And we'll see again with Sam Gagner how useful he can be to their lineup. And that's where things are. So those are my three impressions as well.
Yeah, I'll just give one, so that, you know, because you guys gave probably every other one that I could think of. I really liked the sixth-round pick of Cooper Marody. I didn't think he'd fall that far. I'd followed him for years already in the USHL and really liked his vision and his face-offs. He's really a great face-off guy. And the funny thing about him is I was the only person that spoke to him at the combine, and I knew that he had spoken to Flyers in season. And I tried to make it a point of telling people that the Flyers just didn't have enough hours at that combine to interview everybody. So yeah. when people were sort of thinking that, well, if they didn't get interviewed by the Flyers, it didn't matter. Well, that's not true. And so now I think we learn that, hey, if they meet with him in season and have no other questions, they might still draft him. And this sort of proves that. So it was interesting to see that. You know, other than that, I one of the better picks, and I thought really, to be honest, Marity might have been the best value pick in the draft. But, for the Devils to get Blake Spears, they're a team that always waits around for somebody who's not supposed to fall, and then always seem to get them. And that's a good pick. I mean, that is a guy who has a lot of potential, a great shot, and something that the Devils desperately need. And, you know, I just started to hear whispers this year that maybe you could start to count out David Conte because they're not loaded like they used to be and everything else. And a couple of years ago, I had said that Damon Severson was the best steal in the draft, and, you know, 2 years later, he was playing in the NHL. I'm not always right like that, but the Devils usually are. So, like, Trav, what do you think? I mean, I think the Devils actually did a good job of restocking there.
Yeah, I think they did too, and I think that, I mean, the biggest winner to me in the draft was the Leafs. I mean, some of the picks that they made, I don't have the list in front of me, but, you know, I remember seeing some of the picks. Like, they seemed to get every guy that fell, whether they mm-hmm. traded up to get some guys or whatever the deal was. They seemed to be really adept. And, I mean, honestly, I'm afraid to live in an NHL where the Maple Leafs know what they're doing. It's been
but they
so
did
long.
Have a good draft. On paper, they definitely like. Did.
Yeah, so, I mean, but again, I mean, and that's the biggest thing is that, you know, I mean, You can scout these guys all you want. You can, you know, you really never know how it's going to pan out. But, you know, you can tell the teams that tend to, you know, do this sort of thing frequently. And I'm afraid to live in a world where the Leafs are one of those teams. And it seems like they were this weekend. So that worries me a little bit, to be honest with you.
Well, here was the thing that I liked about the Leafs. I mean, they weren't afraid to take Marner. The whole world knew they were going to take him. Then they took Travis Dermott, right. who really was a star defenseman, but at 5'11", maybe too many people thought he got points from Strome and McDavid, but he really didn't. He's really good. And then yeah. they took one of my favorite picks in the draft, Jeremy Bracco, who I'll pretty much go on the limb now and guarantee he'll play in the NHL, where I know a lot of people will be like, well, he's 5'9", yada, yada. The kid's sick of it. Actually, he came on our radio show on NHL Network Radio. We got him as part of the gauntlet. So we even got him before, you know, the media got him. And he came on and said something about the haters. And it's just, you know, you feel bad when someone's 5'9" and they have all this talent and they have to be sort of defensive like that. But that's what you have to do sometimes. And so, yeah, they made 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Out of the 9 picks, if the Leafs hit out on 4 of them, they'll be doing great, Ant. I mean,
yeah.
whether people in the East want to hear about it or not, it was a pretty successful day just from the amount of picks, and that's always a good thing.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, it's
good job.
A Maple Leafs organization with money that's also smart seems like a very dangerous concept if you're an Eastern Conference team. And obviously, they've always had the money thing. It's just a matter of the brains thing. You know, that's always been there for them, especially in the last decade or so. So, you know, it seems like they're starting to get their stuff together under Shanahan, and I guess, you know, Kyle Dubas is really kind of slotting himself into the general manager's role there, whether or not
yeah.
that actually, you know, becomes his title, but it seems like he's kind of figuring that out and kind of working his way into that. So, I mean, yeah, they're on the right path, at least, whether or not that path remains clear is to be seen, but they're on the right path.
And it does seem like the Michael Fuda stuff now has died down, and I don't think he's going or was ever
no,
going
I think
to the
I think
Leafs.
Staying in Los, yeah, I believe you. I think he's staying in Los Angeles at this point. You got Hunter also there in Toronto as well, along with Dubas. It's kind of a little bit of a triumvirate in Toronto with Shanahan at the top, I guess you could say at the top point there with Dubas and Hunter underneath. So, yeah, it's going to be really interesting certainly going forward with them.
You know, there's always picks that come up and I didn't get to pay as great attention as I normally would like to because after every pick we're having a talk on the radio and so I didn't even have sheets in front of me. I would just have to look on the computer and, you know, the Wi-Fi wasn't the best, right? I think you guys probably experienced that. So we're trying to refresh and see everything. And one pick that I was, like, sort of shocked at that it took so long was fifth round, 147th overall, Ryan Pilon, who's Rich Pilon's
yeah.
nephew. And I always say, no slight to Rich. He's a Facebook friend. He plays nothing like Rich. He's actually a very good skater and has a little bit of offense in his game, but really is a big, tough defender. And he played in the top prospects game. And so, Trav, when you see a guy like this and you say he falls to 147th, it was good for the Islanders to get him, but you always kind of wonder, like, what are these whispers? What do team – or a team so
right.
married to what they have on the board that they just continue to let a guy fall?
Yeah, it's – you know, it's interesting. And it also – you know, as the draft goes on and these teams are sitting there with what might as well be no time on the clock, right? Like,
right.
How much time do they really have to go that much off their board, right, to really have those debates and really
mm-hmm.
you know, get down into it? And, you know, if a guy falls and he might not be on, you know, a certain number of teams' boards or whatever, I mean, that's the opportunity to fall. And, yeah, I mean, he was one guy that I thought the Flyers might take at 128.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was 128, right? The Flyers fifth round pick, and
sounds about right.
Yeah, they wound up not taking him, and he falls all the way down there. You know, it's weird how this works, and you never really get a sense of it because of course the teams never really talk about it. But you know, yeah,
no.
You ask, and maybe you sit there after the draft and you ask a scout or you ask Ron Hextall or something. You know, what do you think about that guy at that pick? And you know, they're never going to tell you anything, but
usually,
we never get a draft. Yeah, yeah. Give it time,
usually a
right?
year later, I get word on my show. Like, guys, some of the scouts will actually come clean, but they won't do it anytime soon. That's for sure. And
right.
so you have to just sort of live with that. But and also goaltenders. I mean, we sort of knew maybe one, and everybody was saying Samsonov, and it doesn't shock me that he would go in that first round. But even.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the second round, just a few, like, this wasn't, like, so deep a goaltending draft that teams were jumping on goalies. Like, they were just sort of waiting on goalies, really.
No, I mean, and that's more or less what our impressions were going to be of this, that there was potential, obviously, for a Samsonov to be taken high. I think most of the goaltenders are pretty much taken where we sort of expected them to. Black, what we knew, was the
yeah.
second best. And he was taken 42nd by New Jersey. And then after that, things just kind of, you know, he was the singular goalie taken in the second round. It wasn't until round three that we started to see goaltenders starting to come off the board. Obviously, you know, Philadelphia with picking the third goalie in the draft with Sandstrom, and Vladar goes off the board a few picks later to Boston. And then we get a run on goalies after that. Three goalies taken after that. Hill, and I think Montembeault was also taken. So it was like, everybody's like, oh, better grab one now or else we're not going to, we may be left high and dry. It was kind of interesting to see that. But yeah, goalie, you might have somebody out of this draft, but again, it wasn't one of those positions where you said, you had to say yourself, I have to have a guy in round one. That's just kind of the way it
was. Right.
Yeah.
Now, Trav, one of the things that I enjoyed on this draft, is I'm not a big fan of mock drafts. I usually just like to do my rankings. But once in a while I get asked to do it, so I'll play along. But the Boston Bruins blew up anybody's mock drafts. and that's fun.
Yeah. You know, we do this mock draft at SB Nation every year where, you know, we have our blog for each team. And, you know, that
right.
blog, on behalf of their team, they make the pick. And actually
right.
through up until Timo Meier, we were 8 for 8. He went 9
right.
right to the Sharks. We were 8 for 8, and you know, and then you know, Meyer was a little off the board, and then we got the next couple of picks, and then the Bruins just ruined the entire thing. But you know, it was a benefit for teams like the Flyers. I think obviously they get Konechny who falls,
oh, yeah.
and you know, the Islanders get Barzal.
Winnipeg,
and,
are you kidding? Winnipeg, like,
yeah,
Kyle
Winnipeg
Connor. How did he get through that? You know.
Yeah, I mean. Yeah, I saw somebody tweeted, I don't remember who it was, but it was right when the Bruins came on the clock at 13, and they tweeted, man, the Bruins could get Connor Barzal and Kylington right now.
Yeah.
And they didn't take a single one, and they took
no.
two guys who were totally off the board. And, you know, Borrell was maybe the only pick that you could kind of see there. But you
even
know,
I
was,
had him as a second rounder. I had DeBrusk as a you know, middle first rounder. I would have definitely taken Connor. I definitely would have taken Barzal. And again, I don't care how many centers I'm taking. I'm not worried about it. And Colin White would have been a great local story, not to be a besides being a really good pick. They didn't go either of those ways. And then the funny thing is in the second round, they did a great pick with Brandon Carlo, and it seemed like their fans were happier with that pick.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, Carlo was a guy who would have made more sense to go at 14 or 15 than at 35.
Right.
But, you know, it was weird that way. I mean, you know, again, we'll see how it works out for him. But, yeah, I mean, the crazy thing is that, like Zachary Simpson, like, he could have been an easy second-round pick for them, if not a third-round pick. Probably.
Some people had him
in the way
40 picks off. I mean, you know, they was all over the board for him.
So, yeah, I mean, that's how the draft is. Like, you can't, you know, you pick the guys you want, obviously, but you also have to be smart and, you know, pick guys where you think they're going to be available. You know, I mean, anybody who's ever drafted in a fantasy draft knows this, right? Like, you don't pick a guy in the first round when you know he's going to be available in the sixth. So, you know, I mean, it's just the way drafts work, and it's a little weird that they went off the board this much, but... I mean, especially considering the fact that they had three first-round picks in a row, which is just completely unprecedented. But, yeah, it's just a crazy draft. Just a crazy draft for them. And, again, who knows how it's going to actually ultimately work out.
Yeah, where I was staying, we did a mock draft just while we were drinking beer, hanging out at the pool. And through our first 12, we had matched and we didn't even look at his latest one. We had matched Craig Buttons to a T, so we told him about that, and he laughed. Because, you know, he obviously didn't do it with alcohol involved, but appreciated our effort. And but it is always fun doing these things and then seeing after the fact. I always enjoy after the fact watching who's going to come out of it. But sometimes the methodology is weird. I was talking to Anthony offline, and you could even speak to this too. When they took Bovier, did they need to do all the maneuvering to take Bovier, or were they listening to whispers? Greatest example of whispers I ever heard was the Rangers swear that they took Dylan McIlrath because they heard Dallas was going to take him with the next pick. Okay, but sometimes you have to call the bluff. Was this just a bluff, or do you think they had to move up to 28 and lose like their 72nd overall? To me, I don't think they had to do it. I think if they'd have stayed at 33rd, they could have taken him.
So I have a question about your mock draft. So you did it at the pool. Who did the iguana take? I know you guys had an iguana.
Was he responsible for? We had like three different ones. The iguana was not a part of it.
The iguana crapped all over his pick.
Pretty much. And everything else. So, Ann, what did you think about the methodology of the Islanders for that one pick? I found it kind of interesting.
Their theory is an interesting one. I do think they were looking for a guy with the speed that Beauvillier had, but... thought it was a bit of an interesting move. Again, Trav and I were obviously downstairs talking with Travis Konechny when that deal went down. I was kind of the Islanders move. I was like, would they give up? And it's like, okay, probably could have waited till the second round for that pick. But it's one of those things. I think you may be onto something where they probably sniffed out potentially that somebody's going to take them. They liked them. They were hoping them. Maybe it's going to drop. You didn't. Sometimes you have to roll the dice and take your shot, and that's pretty much what they did. They made the deal and got him. You can't, you know, that's the way it goes.
Yeah, well, I'm just letting people know we might be a minute or two in OT, so if you're listening live, just come back and there'll be some sort of gold at the end. I was happy to see Steven Ruggiero go in the sixth round to Anaheim. He's a kid out of Penn State. I covered him in a U.S. tournament a couple of years ago. Really nice player. Answers stuff on Facebook, like what draftee answers stuff on Facebook, and you know it's him. So I'm happy for him. I think he'll be a good bottom pairing D-man. But Trav, if you had to sort of pick out one favorite moment for you, what was it?
You know, I think that, and this is an obvious one. I don't want to be cliche about it, but I think that you know, An Dong Song going to the Islanders, first Chinese kid, Chinese born kid taken in the NHL draft. I mean, that's just awesome, right? I mean.
It is.
I love that. And, of course, you know, he's been in the U.S. for a while. He played at Lawrenceville, correct? You know, but he's it's just a cool story. And it shows that the game is growing, and that's obviously great for hockey. And there's also the storyline there, you know, with the Olympics potentially going there to China again, the Winter Olympics this time, a couple of years after the Korea Olympics.
Right.
There's that storyline there too, and it kind of shows that, you know, the Chinese commitment to trying to grow ice hockey in the country. And you know, Song might be the first of that wave. I mean, we'll see. It would be interesting to see if that does become more of a thing in the NHL draft. I mean, who knows, you know, in the next 10 years what we might see. But, you know, I think that's a cool story, and I'm interested to see what the future of Chinese hockey is.
And what's your good feel-good story or feel-bad story? It could be anything.
No, not necessarily a feel-good or feel-bad story, but, Trav kind of took the words out of my mouth with regards to the Islanders' pick of the Chinese. Again, it does definitely show that, you know, the game is growing. You know, we can debate about it as much as possible, but I do think there's something to be said for that. And we could say it's something that was unexpected, pleasant, a certain thing to happen late in the draft. In some ways, it's sort of it sort of gave you sort of the same sort of warm feeling when the Devils drafted Marty Brodeur's kid at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of one of those.
Yeah.
And it's a good story, but in this case, it's probably even more, you know, even more from a social perspective for the league to say that, hey, pride's in the world, and it's a good thing.
Yeah,
my last
he wasn't even a seventh round pick. I mean, they picked him in the sixth. So
yeah,
mm-hmm.
That's a good point. That's a real good point. So, you know, maybe he does have some game. So my last funny one is, so, you know, we're live on the air through the whole seven rounds of the second day, and obviously it gets a little tiring. You get a little loopy. And at one point, Shane Malloy yelled at maybe Nick Alberga, the host, hey, rookie, or something, and Nick Boca was walking by, and he turned around. I'm like, no, he's not talking to you, even though he's a rookie, right? So these guys are so nice at the draft. He thought we were trying to, like, get him back for an interview, and the kid turned around. So it was a good little comedic moment, and it just shows how, you know, that you can have fun at a draft, and I always do. And Trav,
yeah.
I appreciate you coming on. Everybody should go check out SBN and Broad Street Hockey and catch you at Travis SBN. And we're going to tell people that this might be the last show for now, but – you know, if something big happens in free agency, Flyers,
mm-hmm.
Dev camp, something, we'll probably have another show. I mean, we're not
going to
stay that
quiet.
We'll
probably try to see if we can squeeze one more out potentially during Dev camp. And that'll be potentially our final wrap-up show there.
All right, but that's it for tonight's Off the Post. Catch everybody next time.
Take care, everybody.